faith of our fathers living still.
That simple Christian hymn sums up the issue we are examining this month on The Takeaway. The faith of the fathers and mothers of America's so-called millennial generation is being challenged, according to new data from the Pew Research Center. A story of young people attending religious services less often, divided from parents on religious grounds. A quarter of this emerging generation declare no religion or belief system at all. Is America's young nation under God anymore? This is a hugely disruptive issue for Muslim American families. Millennials are by and large the first generation of Muslims born in America. They tend to grow up in close-knit families where faith is a cornerstone of identity. Their encounter with secular America is producing a spiritual earthquake for our next guests, three young Muslim Americans. Tasneem's family, she asked us not to use her last name, comes from South Asia. Zahra Nurbash's family comes from Iran. And Kamran's roots are in Afghanistan. This young man, still in his 20s, is navigating a set of contradictions I could scarcely imagine.
I actually believe that my life is a Venn diagram. I was born here in the United States. My parents emigrated to the country about 30-some years ago. And I have, of course, my Afghan background and my religious background being Muslim. And then also having grown up here in the United States, I've got my Western culture and background. So I feel I'm like in a small sliver of a Venn diagram between the two different cultures and religions.
Tasneem, how do you react to this idea of a Venn diagram of different domains of your life as America encounters the Islam of your traditional family?
You know, I've lived in a number of different cities, and I've gone to a whole mix of, you know, different kinds of schools, different kinds of jobs, and I very much agree with Kamran that it's a way of navigating that's very purposeful. I'm constantly asking myself, you know, what language am I speaking right now? And I don't always mean, you know, literal language, sort of what topics do I want to avoid? What customs do I want to make sure I don't insult? What secrets do I need to keep at this moment, depending on who I'm talking to? So it's a juggling act. There's
wow.
Another one.
I've got a headache there, that's for sure. Zahra Nurbash, let's talk a little bit about your experience with America's encounter with Islam. How's Islam doing?
Islam is doing fine. A little bit of an overcast over here. But I am an actor, comedian, writer. There are little secrets in my world. I describe myself as the pork-eating, alcohol-drinking, premarital, sex-having variety of Muslim.
Amen.
Thank you.
Wow.
And, you know, my parents know my whole life story simply because it's a part of my work. I write memoir. I have a one-woman show about my relationship with my atheist, infidel, whitey white boyfriend, Duncan. And I think because I did grow up so very isolated and I did grow up feeling like I was in that same Venn diagram, that I now have very little containment for secrets. And I'm 33, and I kind of feel like if I can't say who I am now and own it, you know, when is that going to happen? And I don't see any conflict between my saying that I'm Muslim and the way that I practice.
All right, so let's take all three of you, and in various ways, you've challenged Islamic tradition, and you've challenged it on the air. Let's now think of what you've just said in terms of the people who will be listening who might find virtually everything that you've said offensive. If your parents, Kamran, were listening to this conversation, what would they say about you?
Find a place in D.C., don't come back home.
Really?
I'm very proud and surprised to hear that Zahra is so out and open about the way that she leads her life in or around the Muslim community, whereas I have my moments of being maybe a buffet-style Muslim where I do the things that I'm not supposed to do, but I'm very secretive about it.
Zahra, I suspect, compared with Kamran and Tasneem, when you make these challenges for your family, because they're maybe a little bit more experienced, it's a bit more of an eye roll when they go, oh, here she goes again. How do you get to that point? How do you get from a real threat of disownership from family to something that's more, absolutely, oh, well, here we go.
Right. I think there are a lot of factors at play. I think it is very scary to start to see members of your family veer away from traditional practice. My parents have always said that they came here for me to be who I want to be, that's why they stayed here, that's why we're not in Iran.
And they understood that change would come if they came to live
right.
here.
Right. They certainly weren't for it. I mean, I think my favorite moment with my father had to have been when I told him that I ate pork for the first time. He knew that I was in a relationship. I wasn't married. He knew that I'd had boyfriends before. He knew that I'd gone to bars before. But when I told him that I ate pork, he was absolutely horrified. And it took him about a month before he had a reaction to it. We were at a dinner party, and a friend of ours was asking what I wanted on my plate. And my dad just jumps in and he goes, "Oh, you know, Zahra, she eats a pig, a dog, a table, a chair. Just give her whatever you want. She's going to eat it." And I was surprised to see that of all of the elements was the big one.
Now, of course.
That
of
seems
course.
To be the biggest one, I think, out of everything. Yeah. It's always the pork.
We can laugh.
The pork thing.
We can laugh. But, I mean, a lot of people will hear this conversation and go,
absolutely,
how can they just dismiss all of this? This is thousands of years of tradition. This is hundreds of years of practice.
And our entire lives, our entire childhoods, you know. It's not just – it was literally what we were putting in our bodies and our mouths, right, and how we were feeding our souls at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Zahra, if your dad couldn't handle the pork thing, how did he handle you getting married?
When I first introduced my boyfriend to my parents, you know, they were thrilled. I was 25. I had not introduced them to any other man at that point, and they thought, great, somebody likes her. And when I told them that I wanted to move in with him and that we weren't getting married, that was a conversation that turned into a one-woman show. And it took a lot of arguing. It took a lot of fighting. And my mother was actually the one who said, you know, you both are so full of pride and you both think you're absolutely right. And because of that, you're going to tear this family apart. And she burst into tears and left us arguing in the living room. And I think it was the threat of that, the threat of us feeling like we could potentially lose each other, that my father and I, we realized that one of us had to budge. And my father came up with this pre-engagement ceremony. You know, he called me like at midnight later that night. Crazy. I mean, he sounded like he'd been reading Quran, the Quran and all of its scholarly texts in the span that I'd stormed out of the house. And what he had said was that the word Muslim means one who believes in a force greater than himself, and that is the definition of a Muslim. And if Duncan believed in a force greater than himself, then he was Muslim. And I said, well, he's not spiritual like that. You know, he thinks religion is due to the lack of an economic infrastructure. And my dad said, well, come on. Does he believe in gravity? Is gravity a force greater than Duncan? You know, and I like, Duncan, you believe in gravity? He was like, yeah, that's one I can stand behind. And my dad said, all right, he believes in gravity. It is a force greater than himself. He's Muslim.
That's remarkable. All right, so everybody has to go through a certain amount of gymnastics to try to maintain their life. Tasneem, what is the most Muslim thing you tried to do and it failed for you in your life to try to negotiate all of this?
My grandmother met a man once or twice and married him. And my mom met a man once or twice and married him. And I, after years of dating, hit my mid-20s and suddenly had this like insatiable need to meet somebody who understood how I grew up and who could be comfortable with my parents, and who my parents could be comfortable with as well. It became really important for the first time ever, really, to try to find somebody who maybe was like me, right? Grew up in the community and understood the traditions and understood the attachment to some of the food and customs and clothing and jokes. And I did meet somebody with whom I shared a lot of that culture. And I ended up meeting him once or twice and married him. My friends were just flabbergasted, you know, because they knew my story and they knew how hard I'd worked to try to recreate my life in my own, you know, in my own fashion, which is really hard. I mean, one of the things I didn't understand when I started pulling away, and I started pulling away pretty young, I think I was in middle school, actually, was that when you grow up in a really tight-knit community like that, if you leave, you don't get another one. You have to build it yourself. And that's a lot of work. And I think that's part of the reason I wanted to meet somebody, you know, where we could still hold on to parts of that, you know, what we were born into. But, you know, it turns out that that's not enough always.
It didn't work.
And, you know, for just the regular reasons, nothing crazy. It does take years sometimes to figure out our relationship to this stuff.
All right. So Zahra, 33, and Tasneem, 31. The youngest of our trio here, Cameron, has gotten very quiet all of a sudden, possibly looking forward to the kinds of experiences that have just been shared.
Yes.
Cameron, any reaction, any thoughts about doing something very Muslim as a way of resolving your dilemma or very un-Muslim to resolve your dilemma, as both Zahra and Tasneem have shared with us?
I broke out of the mold, I guess, at 18 and got into my first relationship with an American girl. And that caused a whole lot of friction at home, a whole lot. And that friction, ultimately, the ultimatum was, hey, pick her or us. So I went with what they said, and I broke up the relationship. And then when I went away to pharmacy school, I met somebody in pharmacy school and secretly, again, dated them, also an American woman. And they found out, and same sort of thing happened. And this time I had a little bit more experience and I was a little more mature and I was able to put up more of a fight, I'd say. But in the end, that also ended. So I haven't met anybody, I guess you could say, of my community, of my religion. I haven't met that person yet.
But even if you date someone outside of Islam, there's also this other criteria that you just identified. Your love for them has to be worth the misery you're going to go through to break with your family, and that's also a threshold that probably almost no relationship could endure.
Right, and I'm an only child, and so I've grown up getting all of the goodness and the love and the responsibility and the strictness and everything of what my parents had to throw at me, and so having grown up being, you know, the only one in the family, I do have very strong ties with my parents, and that's how I was raised. Was you are a part of a community. You know, out here in the Western world, all of my buddies and all of my friends that I've met along the way, very individualistic, where they could move anywhere they wanted, they can do whatever they wanted, they'd see their families once or twice a year. Whereas the way that I grew up was more, everything that you do is for the family, and everything the family does is for the community. So being raised up until now, even up until now, in that framework, it would be very difficult to try and break out of that. Yeah.
Now, are you? I want your view on this, and then we'll get to Tasneem and Zahra, and then we'll start to wrap this up here. Is this about Islam, or is this just about your family? Tell me what you think, Cameron, and then Tasneem and Zahra. What are you hearing there?
I think that maybe my situation is both cultural and religious, because we're going against the religion, basically, in my opinion, we're going against what the religion says in what we're doing in a lot of our actions. And that's why I consider myself more of a buffet style Muslim. And I think that this issue, at least in my community here, this is a huge issue because a lot of the people are secretive like I am. A lot of the people go through the same thing and they've been raised Muslim and they've been raised Pakistani, Iranian, Afghan, Arab, et cetera, with the same sort of values and going up against the same sort of Western influences that I've gone up against And I think that it's both religious and cultural, but there's definitely the religious aspect because the religion is very different from the culture that we experience here on a day-to-day level in America.
Tasneem and Zahra, is it all or nothing for Cameron? Any advice for him? It seems like a collision to me.
I mean, one of the things that I've asked myself and talked about with friends and siblings and cousins is sort of, what do they expect? You know, they wanted so badly to have their kids raised in America. And I'm not a parent yet, so maybe I'll understand better when and if I become one. But to me, it's, you know, you can't choose. Just like we're sort of cherry picking, right? Like which aspects of culture and tradition we want to keep close and which ones we want to reject. It feels like our parents were trying to cherry pick which aspects of American culture we were allowed to experience and which ones we were sort of expected to just intuitively turn away from. But of course, it doesn't work that way. You know, I remember a moment that just really made me realize like how different my mom and I saw the world when I just graduated from college and was going to be moving into my own apartment for the first time. And I was going to start my first job. And she sat on the edge of my bed and she was crying. And I said, you know, what's wrong? And she said, you know, it's just not right. I mean, you're supposed to move from your father's house to your husband's house. And I just feel like I did something wrong, you know. So
That's exactly how my parents feel.
Yeah, you know, so it's really helpful actually hearing your stories, Zahra and Cameron, because I think it's just that this is all so new for us still.
Well, let's get the view from wise old Zahra.
I really have so much empathy for the position that Cameron is in. This is the moment that I found myself in as well before I was able to tell my parents that Duncan and I were going to be living together. And no relationship, I think it's very right what you said, John, no relationship can survive that. There's no relationship that can survive that kind of weight, that it has to hold up and make up for the loss of your cultural connection, for the loss of your family. It's impossible. And what I see there is a difference between religion and family and tradition and separation. You know, I think that's generational. I think it's terrifying, and I think it's very different than religion. I don't like the word cherry pick, and I don't like the idea of a Muslim buffet, because it suggests that there's a right way to do it, and it suggests that there's an authority on this. And my recollection of studying my religion as a child and growing up is that in Islam, I have a direct connection with God and I get to say, you know, what that relationship is like and what it requires. I am the authority on my faith. The same way that I could know in the back of my mind that there are people listening to this who 100% disagree with me and are offended, they also can know that I too am offended at the notion that I am less Muslim than they are.
Religious Tolerance American Style, the voices of Muslim Americans. Zahra Nurbash, Tasneem, and Cameron, thank you so much for sharing these stories. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, John, for having me on the show today.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.